Next case is Rosiel Camarena against Holder.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Maria Baldini-Poterman, and I represent Petitioner Miguel Rosiles Camarena in this matter. In an unusual procedural posture, Mr. Rosiles comes to this Court for the third time, having been granted withholding of removal under the Immigration and Nationality Act as well as under the Convention Against Torture three times by the immigration judge, who found that he faces not only the probability of persecution, but torture in Mexico, after extensive testimony by petitioner, other witnesses, and an expert witness, and extensive review of country condition documentation. Three times the board has vacated the grants of these mandatory forms of relief. This case presents four important issues for review by this court, three of which the respondent has agreed are questions of law. The first question: does the agency have the ability to review facts de novo when it reviews a question of law, despite its own other regulation, which states that facts are reviewed only for clear error by the trier of fact, being the immigration judge? The second question of law that the respondent agrees this court has jurisdiction over: did the agency fail to conduct a complete analysis of the testimony and record evidence in determining that Petitioner Rosiles failed to establish a clear probability of persecution and torture in Mexico? The third question of law is: did the agency err by failing to apply precedent concerning expert witness testimony, as well as precedent holding that pervasive discrimination can constitute persecution?
So can I go back to your first question? I take it that the Fourth Circuit and the Third Circuit have both said that at least as long as the board's own regulations call for clear error review, then that's what the board has to do, and it goes too far to say de novo. Now, I assume the board could issue new regulations and undertake a different method of review. This isn't statutory, is it?
No, Your Honor, it's not statutory, but yeah. The board is bound by the regulations that are in effect at the time that it issues a decision.
So I'm looking at Turkson and Kaplan, the Fourth and Third Circuit decisions, finding that the board shouldn't conduct de novo review.
Yes, Your Honor, because essentially when the board conducts de novo review of facts and reviewing a question of law, it eviscerates its own regulation, which says that facts are to be reviewed only for clear error. And in this particular case, the board agreed that the judge did not commit clear error in his finding of facts.
Can you point me to the exact language where you're relying on? There's so many opinions in this case that we're talking about the board's September 9, 2011.
Yes, Your Honor.
Opinion. So the board says no clear error exists in the factual findings, but then it's drawing inferences from the factual findings that it thinks the immigration judge shouldn't have drawn.
Yes, Your Honor. On the appendix page 4, which is also administrative record page 4, in the second full paragraph, it reads, no clear error exists in the immigration judge's factual findings, including that the Mexican government has a demonstrated history of discrimination against homosexuals, particularly those with HIV.
But then it goes on. I mean, this is actually an issue that this court has addressed in different contexts about what you do with applications of factual findings like that. In other words, the board could be giving full deference to the factual findings and saying, but we think that the bottom line inference to draw from those is different from the bottom line inference that the immigration judge, and I guess that's what we really need to zero in on here. They're saying, well, let's give you all these facts. Does that add up to persecution, convention against torture sorts of behavior?
Yes, Your Honor. In this particular case, however, reviewing the rest of the opinion, there are facts which the board nowhere ever references, including the judge's finding of facts regarding the testimony of Raul Rosales, who testified extensively about persecution of homosexuals, attacks, as well as homosexuals with HIV. And Raul testified in both the initial hearing, which lasted over 8 hours on January 18th of 2008, as well as in the remanded hearings. At the time, Raul had been traveling back and forth and throughout Mexico for 8.5 years and had extensive personal knowledge from having both watched the television as well as interacted with people at all levels.
Counsel, I think we may be talking past one another here. The board didn't make any findings inconsistent with that. As I understand what the board did, it said, look, there's both private and public hostility toward homosexuals in Mexico. Mexicans have been killed because of their homosexuality, and so on. And all of that is consistent with the historical facts. And then the board says, we don't think this meets the statutory definition of torture because the probability isn't high enough. Right? There are 122 million people in Mexico. The minimum estimate homosexuality rate is 2%. So if you have 12 people a year being killed, the probability of any one homosexual being killed is very small. Right? That's what the board is saying. Now, did any witness take issue with that? Because that seems to me what the board's proposition is.
Yes, Your Honor. The expert witness that the board agreed was an expert, Dr. Thomas Davies, in his opinion, stated that Mr. Rosales faced a 60 to 70% probability of persecution in Mexico.
And what data supports that?
That was based on his review of country reports as well as his interactions and travels through Mexico.
Data, concrete facts. And then we can figure out whether the board disagreed with those concrete facts.
Your Honor, there was...
Part of this problem, it seems to me, is that, as I say, we're talking past one another. Your brief and some of the witnesses view adverse interactions, being sneered at or insulted, as persecution, and the board doesn't. Right? The board's trying to figure out what is the probability that this man will be assaulted or murdered. And some of your witnesses are trying to figure out what is the probability that he will be insulted on the streets. Those are different questions. Are there any underlying data that call into question the board's conclusion that the probability of being killed is very low?
No, Your Honor, other than the testimony of the witnesses and the
Canadian. How about the probability of being beaten up? Do we know how many, just as a matter of historical fact in the record, how many beatings could be attributed to homosexuals? You know, how many homosexuals are beaten every year?
Your Honor, there is no specific data. However, there was testimony that the number of beatings to which someone may be subjected on account of their homosexuality was vastly underreported. The record does specifically mention that there is a stigma to being a homosexual. There was a report from the Canadian Immigration.
The board agreed with that. The board agreed that that homosexuals are treated very poorly, both privately and publicly. But you say beatings of homosexuals are vastly underreported. What are the reported numbers that this record shows?
Your Honor, there was a report from the Canadian Immigration Refugee Board, which was referenced by Dr. Davies in his testimony. In addition, you have multiple years in a row of the State Department reporting that.
Could you just answer my question? What are the reported numbers show, number of beatings of homosexuals in a given year?
I do not have that number at this time, Your Honor.
All right. Because if we know that and we then assume something is vastly underreported, say underreported by an entire order of magnitude, it would be possible to get a handle on what risks are.
Well, was the board, I mean, I'm looking at page 3 at the top, and the board is talking about these reports. The other two state the number of people who were killed between 95 and 2006, but what I'm not sure, they're also the 2008 country reports from Mexico indicate the reports of attacks on homosexuals are frequent. Well, obviously, there's a difference between being killed and being physically attacked, and neither one of them is good. But it does sound like there's at least some evidence of reports of attacks from this 2008 country report. But I wonder if there was just, you know, more, or maybe the evidence wasn't brought out enough about physical attack as opposed to actual killing.
And, Your Honors, there are various levels of persecution. And as the immigration judge initially said back in his January 18, 2008 opinion, the fact that one police chief was finally arrested for having been responsible, allegedly responsible for 12 murders, was a little too late. The fact that there may not have been massive killings each year does not eliminate the fact that the discrimination is pervasive and that discrimination can constitute persecution under the Act.
Look, what finding was made by the immigration judge that you think the board didn't honor? What I understand the immigration judge to have said about the probability of being a victim of physical assault was that it was, quote, within the realm of possibility, close quote. Now, the board thinks that being within the realm of possibility, just as a matter of law, doesn't satisfy the convention against torture. Was there some more concrete finding of fact by the immigration judge about the probability that your client would be subject to physical attack?
Yes, Your Honor. The immigration judge had, in both of his opinions, found that Mr. Rosales would be singled out for persecution based on his age, being that he was an over...
No, look, my question is there a finding by the immigration judge about probabilities? Right? You could get at probabilities from numbers. But was there a finding about probabilities, independent of numbers, more definite than this statement that it is, quote, within the realm of possibility, close quote?
Regarding the findings, Your Honors, I supplemental pages 43 through 46, the immigration judge discussed the context of the country, which I believe is where the judge really looked at what is the probability that he would be attacked. The judge
specifically he in particular, not random homosexuals, but Mr. Rosales himself.
Yes, Your Honor. On supplemental appendix page 47, the immigration judge found it is clear to this court that given that the respondent has no close family ties in Mexico, this would result in respondents to lack a network of persons who perhaps could help to protect him, given the ineffectiveness of the police. So looking at the record as a whole, I'm going to find that the respondent has established his burden of proof, that it is more likely than not that he would be persecuted on account of his sexual orientation. Your Honors, regarding the immigration judge's findings, in light of the context of the situation in Mexico, the board in nowhere in its discussion even referenced the issue of the Catholic Church being a major player in the political scene in Mexico. It did not discuss in particular the firing of Jorge Saavedra, which Dr. Davies specifically referenced. He was the head of the program in the public health ministry regarding the promotion of tolerance programs after he revealed at the 2008 AIDS conference that he was homosexual and had HIV. Instead, there has been a retrenchment within the Mexican government since 2006, and based on this record, of an anti-homosexual stance. The government eliminated the program to promote tolerance for homosexuality. So where the board references that the situation in Mexico has improved, it has not improved to that point because the government, in fact, has cut programs to assist homosexuals. We further submit, Your Honors, that regarding the...
You're into your rebuttal. You know that, don't you?
I'm sorry, please?
So you're eating into your rebuttal time, but you do whatever you want.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll rest at this time. I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Williams.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jennifer Williams on behalf of the respondent, the United States Attorney General. We concede that the issue the Court has been discussing is a legal question over which the Court has jurisdiction, regardless of the bar to judicial review at INA 242A2C. We have an argument regarding the scope of that bar if the Court wishes to discuss it. I'm prepared to. If not, I'll jump into the legal question, which...
That would be helpful to me. I can't figure out why the Attorney General and DHS are so determined to deny relief to this man, because it does seem that the board focused unduly on the risk of being killed as opposed to the risk of other violence against this particular individual. I mean, it's one finds the board saying when generic evidence, you know, homosexuals are persecuted, is presented, the board says, oh, well, but we don't know about individual A. And then when evidence about individual A is presented, the board says, well, but how do we know that that's because of group? And so it's a little bit of heads we win, tails you lose kind of reasoning. The immigration judge seems to have focused on why, because of his membership in this group, this particular man is going to suffer from persecution.
Well, with the board, as an initial matter, I think it's important to focus on the type of relief for which he would be eligible. He is not eligible for asylum, for which the burden of proof is much lower. Yeah, I think that's in part why the board focused on, and really what the board focused on is the burden of proving eligibility, a clear probability of future persecution or torture.
Right. No, I think we all understand that. That's
and
fine.
And the board explained that the evidence in the record of discrimination under this court's case law, discrimination without being severe or without more, doesn't rise to the level of persecution or torture.
But the expert's testimony, and this is a man who had spent huge amounts of time in Mexico, was about physical attack, and it did tie it into homosexuality. And there was other evidence in the record that attack, I mean, where the board says the expert witness did not clarify what he meant by attack, I think that's a little unfair based on the evidence in this record as a whole. Seems like you don't just look at one witness and say, oh, well, this witness didn't talk about attacks, therefore there's no evidence if there's lots of other evidence.
Well, I'm not sure. In the board's view, there wasn't a lot of other evidence. I believe Mr. Rosales' case was based primarily on the expert's testimony. There were other documents in the record.
But halfway up the page from that statement I just read is a comment from the 2008 country reports for Mexico, certainly a reputable source, indicating the reports of attacks on homosexuals are frequent. That's from the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor.
Well, and as the board discussed, attack isn't further explained. This court has case law that...
No, that was the expert witness it's criticizing. It's not criticizing the State Department for...
Well, I believe that the board's discussion is equally applicable to that.
Well, the board didn't say that. The board says the expert witness did not clarify what he meant by attack. That's what the board says.
Well, I'd like to back up for a second and try to... If what we're discussing is the board's scope of review and whether and what it was doing with the findings of fact and the questions of law, then this court has jurisdiction to get into that. If what we're discussing is...
And then see what... And I think we are discussing this sentence in the middle of page 3, which is Appendix 5. To the extent his conclusions on the specific likelihood of such attacks are based on evidence in the record, we may independently review that evidence and draw conclusions different from the ones he reached. I think that is the critical
yes.
sentence about scope of review. And if they've used the wrong scope of review, then they need to take a look at it under the correct one.
Well, that is correct. And that is a question that we concede is a question of law over which the court has jurisdiction.
Right. It's hard to talk about that question without actually talking about the facts.
Well, that's true. But I would just like to make clear that the Convention Against Torture claims aside, and I understand that this court has some other case law on that, the court is clear that its jurisdiction over withholding claims
sure.
is barred by A2C, and it can't get into a review
yeah. and,
of...
And I I just don't know how we can talk about whether the board was following its clear error standard of review in its regulations or whether it was doing something else at the level of the question of law that you're talking about without having some discussion of the evidence. We know what the reason for that discussion is. It's to illuminate the standard of review issue.
Well, that's correct. And what the board is doing is it's looking at the facts, which it found were not clearly erroneous, and making a determination as to whether those facts satisfy the ultimate petitioner's ultimate burden of proof, a question which the board views in its various decisions either as a mixed question of fact or of law or as a question of judgment over which it has, according to its regulation, de novo review. It has a discussion about what it views as a fact over which it has to apply the clearly erroneous standard and what it doesn't view as a fact. And the board clearly differs from the decisions of the Third and the Fourth Circuits in Kaplan and the most recent Fourth Circuit, Turkson.
Right. See,
over
that,
which
that's what
over what is
me.
A fact. And I think
so we would have to disagree with the way the Fourth and Third Circuits approach this.
Yes, you would. And we concede that. The way the Third and the Fourth Circuits have looked at it is to divide up the inquiry into two steps. So the question of the likelihood that something will happen in the future is a fact. And then whether that likelihood satisfies the ultimate burden of proof is a mixed question of law and fact. The way the board views it is as a single inquiry.
So let me ask you, we have Turkson and Kaplan. Has the board persuaded any other circuit of its view?
Well, I don't believe there's been a full discussion in any other circuit. The First Circuit has a decision, I think we cite in our brief, but it's only a couple of sentences. I don't believe any circuit has so far thoroughly considered the issue.
Board's position, okay. Because certainly this court has had a long history of trying to think about the purpose of standards of review and when it really makes sense to have a de novo review and putting constitutional questions to one side where the Supreme Court has directed us, to, like cases like Ornelas, et cetera, to take a de novo approach. For the most part, we think mixed questions are really the kinds of things that still lie within the expertise of the original finder of fact. We've got lots of cases to that effect.
Well, that is correct, and we certainly are not saying that the standard of review that this court employs with regard to these kinds of questions should be different.
No, what I'm saying, that would lead to disagreement with the board, as I understand what
the board
is doing.
Well, the board's position is, and I think it's helpful to look at the history of the regulation, the board's review over these kinds of questions before 2002 was entirely de novo. And there was an effort in 2002 to make the board more like an appellate body and to...
That's when the great flood of immigration cases began, you will remember.
Yes.
Yes.
But the board is not this court. Its function is supposed to be more like an appellate body, but it's still not a federal court of appeals. And the Third Circuit has a decision in the Huang case, which we cite, that recognizes that the standard and scope of review that the board employs can be different over the same question than that employed by this court. And that has to do with the differing purpose that the board has.
But, you know, you're really shaving it awfully finely because, I mean, if the immigration judge really is the finder of fact and the board really is giving clear error review, you know, I'm sure as well as any good lawyer, that that's highly deferential review. And it really shifts the grounds under people's feet. They don't have fair notice of what their burden is if the board suddenly pulls out de novo review and says, well, we were just kidding. You know, we're not going to give deference to the immigration judge's views. You know, people put all their energy into trying to win before the immigration judge and they find out that actually the board is going back to its pre-2002 posture. If the board really did that in every case, I would probably applaud. It seems to me it would likely reduce the flood of appeals.
Well, the board would probably disagree with your assessment that its review in this case is back to its pre-2002 scope of review, the board views the current regulation as giving it the authority to review these mixed questions of fact and law.
But,
de novo.
But nobody else has agreed with the board.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
If the court has further questions on the scope of review issue, I'm happy to answer them. I would also briefly like to talk about the question of jurisdiction over the Convention Against Torture claim. Our position is laid out in the brief. I understand that there have been a number of cases in this court that seem to say different things.
I'm not sure you need to reach it in this case, because the fact that it has to do with the compliance of the United States under an international convention makes it a rather different kind of question. But I'm not clear to me that this is the case to focus on.
Well, the court, there are, as we have discussed, there is at least one legal question presented in the case, which the court has jurisdiction to review, regardless of the bar. I believe petitioner presented a couple of other legal questions. We concede there's jurisdiction over legal questions. We just don't believe that those questions in particular have any merit. The board's decision, I mean, the board has issued a number of, the last decision in particular clearly considers the evidence. There was a lot of evidence presented in the case. No, it doesn't discuss every single piece, but nor is it required to. We simply believe that the claim that it did not issue a reasoned and thorough decision has no merit. And the other legal claim had to do with the expert witness. The case that the petitioner cites seems to stand for the proposition that the agency did not err in not qualifying somebody as an expert witness where he hadn't conducted specific studies. So I'm not sure what relevance that case has to what the board here did with the expert witness's testimony. I think that has more to do with the board's scope of review and whether it can disagree with the conclusions that the expert faced. Other than those questions, we didn't see any other true questions of law over which the court would retain jurisdiction. If the court has nothing further, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further?
Your Honors, Mr. Rosales respectfully requests that this court follow the precedent set by the Third and Fourth Circuits in regarding the regulation for de novo review versus finding of clear of fact. The immigration judge's findings of facts were accepted by the board in each of its decisions, yet the board came to a contrary conclusion. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.